Welcome to the West Elk Word. I'm Tony Todd, here today with Chloe Beaupre. Chloe earned both a Master of Environmental Management and a Master of Science in Ecology from Western Colorado University. And she's published an essay recently in the Journal of Ecosphere about her research on trails and their impact on wildlife. She comes to us today all the way from Syracuse, New York, where she's pursuing her PhD. And she's continuing her ecological studies. So,
yeah, I am currently studying caribou. I kind of like generally study movement ecology, but right now I'm focused on caribou survival in the Northwest Territories and Alaska.
Chloe, welcome. Can you tell us, I know that there's been a lot of study actually on the impact of trails on wildlife, but you took a different vantage point on this. Can you explain that and how you approached your research, what you were looking to find?
Yeah, so there, like you've mentioned, there's a lot of studies on the impacts of recreation on wildlife, but what's kind of a missing component is how trail traffic impacts wildlife. And that's because it's just really difficult to get trail traffic numbers. When we have these like vast expanses of public land, there's often like multiple entry points. There's like visitor logs that people may or may not sign. And so it's really hard to just get like an actual count of how many people are using the trails, understandably so. And so what we did in our study is we used trail cameras to get traffic counts on trails. And then at the same time, we had cameras on trail and off trail. So we were able to get the traffic counts on the trail, and then we could get animal responses on trail as well as off trail. And so we were able to use those trail cameras to get that traffic, which is a number that's hard to get, but also to get the animal responses.
Did you choose trails that you knew to be particularly busy?
We tried to get like a representative sample of trails all around. So we were trying to get like different habitats, different uses. So we were looking at both motorized and non-motorized. And then we also had some issue getting permission to put cameras out. And so we ended up just kind of putting them on little parcels of private property wherever we could get permission from the landowners, or on like state property where we did have permission through the state.
Well, what was your initial inspiration to do this research?
Yeah, so I came into the project a little bit later. There's actually another master's student, Elisa Bevan, who was working on this project with Kevin Blecka, who's another co-author and who worked for CPW. And they were looking at this question because of the forest plan revision. And they were putting a lot of work into this project and realizing that just putting out that many trail cameras and doing all the going out and checking on the cameras and deploying them and retrieving them and then looking at all the photos, they realized that was going to be a lot of work. That would probably be more work than one master's student could feasibly do. And so I got roped in at that point. And I was really excited because I'm obviously super interested in wildlife, and especially like hunted wildlife, so deer and elk. And then like I also am a recreator, you know, I love trail running and hiking. And so just trying to see what the impacts of those are so we can balance sustainable recreation with hunting opportunities was like really interesting and important to me.
And you studied mule deer and elk, particularly here in and around the Gunnison area.
Yep.
You collected a lot of photos. I was doing a little background research here, trying to find out what this project was all about. 130,000 photos, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing. How on earth did you go through all those?
Manually. Elisa and me, we went through each photo one by one. We got to look at lots of photos of blades of grass blowing in the wind where there was actually nothing in front of the camera. Lots of cool wildlife photos, of course. We did have a few cameras that were like found and they were stolen or vandalized. We had one camera that was vandalized by a bear. So we had like photos of the bear tearing down the camera and then like playing with it. So that was kind of cute. Yeah, there was just months of going through photos.
And what did you find?
Well, first we found that there is a ton of recreation. I was pretty blown away by just how many people are out there using these trails. And sometimes it's like constant, you know, like all throughout the day, sometimes even at night. I remember there was one trail in the Alpine Loop, like Lake City area, and there was people trail running on it throughout the night wearing headlamps. So it's pretty remarkable how many people are out there
Was it
using
a
trails.
race or something, maybe?
That's what I'm guessing.
Okay.
So that was pretty astounding. And then in terms of the wildlife response, we found that more recreational traffic had an opposite impact on deer and elk. So we saw with more recreation, there was a negative response from elk, while there was a positive response from deer, which was pretty surprising. And then we also found a pretty clear distance threshold for elk because there was that like negative response to recreation. We found a pretty clear disturbance threshold of about 600 meters from the trail, where we were seeing that negative effect.
So, by negative effect, you mean they fled.
Yeah, we were seeing like less utilization around the trail.
So they weren't using this trail because humans were on it.
Correct.
But the deer were.
Yes, surprisingly, that was kind of counterintuitive. And the way I understand that is that there could be the, like just some habituation, right? Like up in Crested Butte, especially, there's a lot of deer just hanging out in those more like, I mean, I don't want to call it urban because it's Crested Butte, but in those areas that are more habituated to humans. And then also, there's this ecological concept of the human shield effect, where if humans are using trails, they're probably displacing predators, which would be normally deer would be avoiding those areas. But if humans are displacing the predators, the deer could potentially be getting refuge from predators in that shield.
So the predators avoid the trails as well. So that might prompt another study to see what happens with predators when
Oh,
humans.
absolutely. I mean, there are so many photos. So there is like a million offshoot studies. Like I was saying, there is a ton of traffic, like almost nonstop throughout the day, not always throughout the night. And so, like, another really cool study would be looking at whether animals are shifting their activity patterns to be like more nocturnal in response to traffic. There's hundreds of thousands of photos. So, lots of cool data that could still be explored.
Yeah, I love those cameras that sometimes people post to social media where they've just put a hidden camera on a log that crosses a creek and left it there. And you see every sort of animal crossing, bears, foxes, coyotes, badgers, all kinds of stuff that you
We
normally
got a
wouldn't
lot
see during
of
the day. Yeah.
we saw a lot of moose on our cameras, which I was kind of surprised about because they're like a reintroduced species, and so we saw them like a lot, which is, you know, good for the reintroduction effort.
They seem to be doing pretty well. Was there anything else that was surprising?
I mean, I think the like big ones are just how many and or how many recreators there are, and then that like opposite response of deer and elk, and then just it's always surprising and fun to see the different species on your cameras, like you were mentioning. Like we saw lynx on some of our trail cameras, which was pretty cool because the typical lynx study is happening like in the winter, and so to have like summer photos of lynx in some of these areas was really pretty exciting.
Very cool. Well, so what are the implications of this? You mentioned the forest planning that was the sort of the prompt for this study to some extent. What might be some of the things that can be done in recreational planning to mitigate some of the impacts on the wildlife?
Yeah, so I think the fact that we were able to identify this like 600 meter threshold is pretty important. Managers could use like distance to trail maps, looking at those like 600 meter thresholds and just being sure that they are not expanding that area within that disturbance threshold, kind of like keeping the trail footprint within that. I think it's also important that we had these like species specific responses. So just any sort of like management decisions are probably going to be species specific. In this region, we might want to like tailor management to protecting elk habitat, since we didn't see such a strong response from deer. I think also like the fact that we saw responses to traffic and the daily fluctuations in traffic is important in remembering that like not all trails are going to have the same impact based on how much they're getting. And so, to mitigate disturbance for elk, it could be useful to restrict traffic levels and simply not have as many people out there. But I think that's also something that we need to be careful about, is we don't necessarily want to just spread the trail traffic all over, right? Like we saw effects from as few as like six recreators, right? So we don't want to just send people out to use every single trail. because that might actually end up having like these diffuse effects over a wider area rather than just kind of concentrating you in a certain zone.
Yeah, leave the trails that get the least amount of use still the least, so that the animals can have a little bit more normal interaction with that space.
Totally. And I think also just like I mentioned, it's really hard to get these trail traffic numbers, but I think they did really add a lot of nuance to our understanding of the system. And so while it's difficult, I really would encourage people to go out and try and figure out how much traffic is out there, in terms of understanding what's happening and then coming up with potential mitigation measures.
If you're just joining us here today on the West Elk Word, I'm Toni Todd, here with Chloe Beaupre. Chloe holds two master's degrees from Western Colorado University, and she's here to share the results of her research on the impact of trails on wildlife in and around the Gunnison Valley. You mentioned the fear response of the elk compared to the deer, and that's 600 meters, did you say, on either side of the trail? Is that right?
Yeah, we saw a 600 meter threshold. I don't know if it's necessarily like a fear response. I don't know. I always tread lightly about like saying what the behavioral mechanism is. But yeah, we did see like we used two different ways to measure it, and we saw a pretty clear footprint of disturbance up to 600 meters. And then after that, they could kind of outside of that 600 meter threshold, we saw more use.
So it could be fear. It could just be the elk being cautious. They're not necessarily terrified, but they're like, I don't like this. Something's not right.
Yeah, there's also a lot of
Feelings.
research right now into like soundscapes and like auditory impacts. And so maybe it has something to do with how sound is traveling. I can't speak to that as much, but I know that's like an exciting area of research right now.
Yeah, or even the nature of the sound, right? It's a sound they're not familiar with, so they back away. It may not be the volume of it, but the nature of it. Like, probably to an elk, a predator sounds different than a deer or another elk or something that's not harmful.
Like a motor is going to perhaps have a different impact than somebody talking, or, like a quiet bike might not have the same impact as a motorcycle. But there's people a lot smarter than me who are researching that.
Do you have any plans for any follow-up studies on this?
Not currently. I think there's a lot of opportunities for other people to pick it up and use the data set. But for me personally, I'm just trying to finish my PhD. I would love to come back to Colorado and keep doing recreation studies. I think it's really important. I was like rewriting or doing revisions on this paper in the last year while I was here in New York and getting very nostalgic for the Gunnison Basin and all the beautiful places I got to go and put out trail cameras. And yeah, I would love to go back and dig into it some more.
Well, come on back. We're right here. Well, while I've got you here, tell me about a little bit about your caribou research. I know you're going up into Canada, studying the boreal forest up there. Lots of fires up there. How is that impacting the caribou, and what are some of the things you're studying with them?
Yeah, there are lots of fires. I will say that it's like a very fire-adapted ecosystem, but the fires these days are kind of unprecedented in terms of their like intensity and frequency. I am like broadly studying caribou survival. I have a couple different projects focused on the different like ecotypes of caribou. So one of my projects is more focused on migratory barren ground caribou, and those are the ones that do the like pretty iconic long distance migrations that we all hear about. They actually have the longest migration of any species in the world. Amazing. And then I'm also studying boreal caribou, and those are like woodland caribou, and they don't do the long distance migrations. They're a little bit more sedentary, and their predator avoidance strategy is just kind of like hunker down, and they're a little bit less social than the gregarious migratory caribou. Boreal caribou, though, are a threatened species in Canada, so they fall under like a nationwide recovery strategy. And so for that project, I'm kind of assessing how the nationwide recovery strategy for boreal caribou is working. Part of that is looking at fire disturbance as well as human disturbance thresholds, and just reassessing those.
What made you choose caribou?
I am very interested in hunted species. So that's, you know, I was interested in mule deer and elk in Colorado. And then caribou, they're a hunted species. They're also like really important subsistence food for Northern Indigenous folks. And so that was really interesting for me, like culturally, the fact that they're culturally important. And then biologically, they're just fascinating because they do these like super long migrations, but they're also really variable about like where they winter. They aren't like necessarily going to the same place every single winter where they, like a deer might do, you know? And so there's a lot of questions to be asked about how they move and what they do. And so, yeah, they're just super cool and interesting.
Chloe, what would you say to those in the planning field who might be interested in trying to lessen the impact in Colorado or really anywhere where recreation and wildlife connect?
Yeah, I mean, I think generally it's just really important to like balance users' experience with habitat. Like, I know for me, part of why I like going outside and hiking or running or, you know, just even going camping is like the hope of being able to see an animal, you know? And so just being cognizant that we do have effects when we're out there is really important. And I think it's good to remind users that part of why we enjoy being out there is because we want to have these experiences with wildlife. And so to just be like humble and understand that maybe sometimes when animals are especially vulnerable, we might need to close a trail so that they can have time and space to like do breeding or whatever it is during these sensitive times. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Yeah, no, you are. I think just awareness on the part of humans that they're having an impact seems important. And
Yes.
I guess almost like a marketing campaign or something like that would be appropriate to get the word out to folks to be aware that you're walking through the home of another creature and to tread lightly and to be respectful of those critters and to know that they're watching you just as much as you're watching them and all of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, maybe it means you don't get to go, or for me, it would be like, I don't get to go run on the trail this day. And that's a little bit of a bummer, but that means maybe next time when the trail's open and it's like healthy for wildlife for me to be out there, then I do get the opportunity to see an elk or a deer or whatever it might be.
Very good. Well, Chloe Beaupre, it's been delightful talking to you. Thank you for sharing your research with us and for joining me today on the West Elk Word.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the West Elk Word. You can listen to this or any edition of the program anytime. Go to kbut.org, click Programs, then West Elk Word. Thanks for listening this week. See you next time. Support for KBUT and the West Elk Word comes from Towny Books and Rumors Coffee and Tea House, serving locally roasted coffee and fine loose-leaf teas. Towny Books stocks new books for children and adults and can special order anything. Read books. Drink coffee. Fight evil.
I will tread down a lonesome track, set my eyes on the wild and won't look back. I will follow where my heart reacts. Venture out to the great unknown, find a place where I can feel alive again. climbing up from the valley below, seeing places and faces I've never known. I will follow to the open road. Through the trees till I see the sun, now I know that I can feel alive in. Throw caution to the wind. I'll find my feet on the way. I'll find my feet on the way. I'll find my feet on the way. I'll find. drive canyon roads. Our wild hearts run like wandering souls. You make me wanna live in each moment and stop worrying and hurrying to get where I'm going. Slow down my mind, just enjoy the ride. Lately I've been feeling a little uprooted. Is it alright with you if I don't know what I'm doing? You push me to the unknown, said it's beautiful to just let go. So honey, I'm all in, timber, I'm falling. It's a new day, a different page, and we're the authors. We belong in the wind, wild and free. Letting go of everything holding me. Cause lately I've been feeling a little uprooted. Is it alright with you if I don't know what I'm doing? You push me to the unknown, said it's beautiful to just let go. So honey, I'm all in, timber, I'm falling. Oh timber, I'm falling. Falling.